Hey, I'm Ryan McCaffrey with IGN. You are listening to Gamertag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Worldwide. Podcasting since 2005. Take it out. You're listening to Gamertag Radio. Back on the scene. With your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go.
Man, oh man, we are here back here, Gamertag Radio, listening to episode 565. This is your host, Danny. And also joining us this week, we have Paris.
I need to make a correction from last episode. Again, thank you, Ryan McCaffrey, for coming on the show and talking about Xbox and E3. But when he put that gun to our head and asked us to say our favorite 360 game, I knew this was going to happen in the moment. And sure enough, I kept thinking exclusive 360 games, but it wasn't really that. It was just favorite game on the 360. Mass Effect 2. It's one of the greatest games ever made. How could I not say that? It's not Halo 3. It's Mass Effect 2.
I was very surprised that you say Halo 3. I'm like, man.
Because I panicked.
Didn't say Mass Effect.
He had a gun to my head. I panicked. I was like, Halo 3.
Yeah. Great interview, man. That thing has been going around. A lot of people talking about it. So thanks, Ryan, for joining us last week. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. And also we have Pete.
What's
Pete
up?
In the house.
How you doing?
Good, man. What's up with you?
It's early. We're trying to get used to this recording early thing. I like it though. I like the recording early. It's the juice is flowing.
Okay. The last episode we recorded like that, I felt weird. I don't know. Recording early in the morning.
It's like we're cheating on our girlfriend or something. We're recording in the morning. But no, I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. You know, just watched Civil War last night. Man. Mm-hmm. That movie was so good, man.
I'm still conflicted, dude. I'm still conflicted, but I don't want to go into that discussion.
Paris, you're okay with it, right? You're good with the movie.
Oh yeah, I thought it was amazing. I'm trying to figure out when I'm going to go see it again because I think I got to see this at least two more times, you know, to fully just sink in everything that was going on. But hey, look, just real quick, and not spoilers, but they nailed Black Panther, they nailed Spider-Man. Ant-Man was fantastic again, and obviously the rest of those characters were so invested in over the past 8-9 years that this was like that culmination of everything coming together. It was great. I loved it.
Yeah, definitely, man. Love it, love it. All right, head over to gamertagradio.com or play.it/gamertag. Listen to our past episodes, and also you can check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. You could also email us fanmail@gamertagradio.com or give us a call 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR.
Oh, one more thing. Hey, Aunt May. Holla at your boy.
Okay. All right. So let's discuss about this, man. EA and DICE finally announced a new Battlefield game. This game is going to be called Battlefield 1. They were planning to have a big announcement, a live stream on Twitch and other places, and of course, as usual, leaks just came out about this game. There was the logo, the name, everything. People were saying that this is going to be a World War One based game and all this stuff, and then we finally revealed it, and yes, everything was true, which I think it was leaked on purpose, but that's just me, my crazy conspiracy theories, but whatever. But we watched it, and I was thinking, man, okay, as a trailer, great job. Everything is cool. I'm not super hyped just yet because I would like to see some gameplay or maybe just sit down and play it during E3 or EA Play in June. But as a trailer, personally, I think it was a better trailer than Call of Duty that just also got announced a couple weeks ago. The only thing that I could say that got more people hyped than this game, the Battlefield, is that, you know, having that remaster of the classic Modern Warfare, I think that's going to help a lot to get like the hardcore fans of that game probably going to purchase Call of Duty for that. Two games and for one price, not bad. I just need to see more gameplay, man, to actually be hyped, man. Because right now I'm just like, okay, cool trailer. Great announcement. Awesome. And that's about it. You know, but I want to get your feedback, guys, because I know you, Pete, you've been a fan of Battlefield in the past. So what are your thoughts about it?
I've said it before, and I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm not going to go back on what I've said in the past. I think we've beaten that horse of World War One and World War Two to the ground. I think we've captured that way too much. Mm-hmm. Call of Duty kind of went into the Vietnam era. That's an era of time that I guess the United States doesn't like to really dwell upon, and they kind of did it with mm-hmm. with some Vietnam era type stuff. But I don't know. I'm done with the old World War stuff, and I don't know about how that marketing came about, but that looks like Doctor Strange with a corn dog with spikes on it on that launch image, and I'm kind of confused with this whole alternate World War One environment concept. I love the fact that they're bringing horses. It's kind of like the Red Dead Redemption that we haven't had. But I'm not stoked for it like I've been in years past. I think I may have finally crossed that level of video game playing maturity where I'm not excited for it. I see everybody jumping on Twitter and Facebook talking about, oh my God, this is amazing. But I don't see it. It doesn't do that for me anymore. Had this been 3 years ago, I'd been I'd have been, oh my God, this is the greatest announcement of all time. But now I'm
I mean, look, I think that's the thing that drives me crazy online. People see a trailer and everybody go crazy and posting hashtag rest in peace Call of Duty. Come on.
Yeah,
really?
That's
ridiculous. That's not no, but see, I gotta give DICE and EA props because they're taking it back to an era where it hasn't been done in a very long time. I think too many games are copying each other and doing the same exact thing, futuristic, you know, first person shooters and stuff. And that gets old, man. You know, I think you gotta give them props for making that step. And I know I posted this in our chat that Peter Moore talked about that, of course, the EA, like the team behind the scenes, they were kind of like afraid to at first to make this move. But once they started making research and finding out that a lot of fans would like to play games like that during the World War One era, I think that's a great movement by them. So props for making that move, man. You know, I don't see anything bad about it, you know, but
Paris has been kind of itchy for something. So I want to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, go for it, Paris.
Well, here's a hilarious thing. I'm supposed to be the jaded, bitter, grumpy grandpa on here, and you're the two on here, you know, not being impressed. I think here's what I think. I think it did the job. It got me interested in Battlefield, and it got me interested in World War One in this sense. Look at what Bethesda does with Wolfenstein. That is an alternate World War II reality, right? And that's a fantastic universe that they built, and they can keep iterating on it, and I'm interested in it. By them saying, all right, we're going to World War One, but it's not going to be in a historically accurate World War One. It's going to be something different. I'm interested because that's a different era. That's a different set of weapons, vehicles, just soldiers, just everything that they can do in that era. So it is something different. You know what I mean? Look at, you know, even look at, take a game like Resistance. They did something similar, obviously. I mean, even the Fallout series, that is an alternate reality on something that was historically accurate. So I'm interested. My thing, like you guys have already said, is I'm over getting, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing by seeing a teaser trailer. You want to get me excited? Show me someone with a controller in their hand and I'm actually looking at gameplay. That's what I want to see. And even more so, I'm not so interested in the campaign when it comes to a Battlefield series or even like a Call of Duty. What is the multiplayer going to be? That's going to be the thing that hooks me, is what are they going to do with the multiplayer? What are they going to iterate on from previous Battlefield games that's going to get me excited about this? Are we going to see more destructible environments? What was the marketing phrase they had? Level something, you know, where the level will change, something would happen in a multiplayer match, it would completely change the landscape of the multiplayer thing with like a destructible environment. I forget what they call it now, something level something. But the point is, or are we going to see an advancement on that? You know, obviously this is going to be strictly next gen console. So Xbox One, PlayStation 4, PC. So are we going to see a little more power, you know, a little more under the hood as far as what the environment's going to do, all that? I'm excited to see more. And I think that's what this teaser did. It got me excited to see more. Whereas, you know, got to compare it to Call of Duty. Call of Duty did the opposite in that I just felt like it was more of the same. I didn't see anything that was like, oh man, I can't believe they're going to go to this period of time and they're going to do this or going to do that. The only thing I saw was they're going to space, and I'm like, okay. You know, it's these teaser things have run their course, in my personal opinion. You know, it's really all about the gameplay, but we're quote unquote the hardcore gamer, so this isn't really the people that they're talking to with these teaser trailers. They're trying to get the average consumer interested in these games. And then E3 is where they're going to unveil all the gameplay and all that kind of stuff. So like I told a nameless person yesterday, get me to E3. That's when I'll be excited about all this stuff, when I can actually get hands on and or get more information on the campaign and the multiplayer.
I think you were Levolution is, I think, what you're
Levolution. There you go.
Levolution. Yeah. You're right. Right. But here's the one thing that I thought about the other day, too, once they announced this, is that, you know, Call of Duty has a marketing deal now with Sony, and Battlefield 1 has a marketing deal with Xbox. And in the past, I've been saying this since day one, I think Xbox has always been great at marketing. So I'm wondering what type of marketing ideas are they going to be doing from now to October once this game releases. You know, they did an amazing job promoting Call of Duty once they had their marketing deal in the past with Activision.
Well, I think part of that is going to come through now. The part that I, all right, so on the, when they had the launch event yesterday, there's the marketing, the exclusivity. I think you get to play the game early through, what is it, EA Now, I think it's the service.
EA Access.
But for those that don't have EA Access, if you want to play it earlier than the launch, you can get the Early Enlister Deluxe Edition, and you pay $80. So you pay $20 extra instead of the $5 a month it costs for EA Access, and you get to play it 3 days earlier.
What are your thoughts about that? Because now they've been doing that lately with a lot of other games, though, man. I know they're doing that with Gears of War 4.
Well, it's the developers or the publisher's way of generating hype to say, oh, look, dude, you could play it earlier. You could just, you know, you could, you know, you pay a little extra. It's the wallet warrior mentality, I would assume, where, you know, if I could do this for a little bit, if I could play this a week earlier or 3 days earlier, just all I had to do is shell out an extra $5-$10, would you do it? So $5-$10, okay, but an extra $20? Like, I'm hoping that deluxe edition comes with a hell of a lot more, like maybe like a model biplane that I could put in my office or something, but I can't see $20 extra being a valid reason to go out and get the game just to play it earlier.
I mean, if you're a fan of the game, I don't see nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's up to you if you really want to pay that or wait a week later and get the normal price.
But again,
back to $59.99.
They didn't detail much into what goes into the Early Enlister Deluxe Edition, short of just saying, oh, well, you'll get to play it on the 18th instead of the 21st like everybody else. Is there going to be more in there? You know, is that all DICE and EA is giving you for that extra $20? It'd be interesting to see. But we've seen the Microsoft marketing machine in full glory over the past couple of years. It's always going to be between them and Sony doing the big marketing push. I mean, we see it now with everything on either a baseball game, or we're watching basketball, or we're watching UFC, and there's a big logo in the middle of the octagon. So I don't think marketing is going to be the issue. Let's put it that way. I think they're going to be okay on the marketing point.
Definitely. What are your thoughts of this game being 64 players? I mean, I don't know. I'm not really too crazy about it, really. I don't know. I just want to play it, man. Enough of this little teasers here and there. I want to just actually see it and play it.
How many people do you know that actually play the game? Do you know 64 people that would play all at the same time and you could jump in and get into a big squad match? I mean, is there a party limit on PS4? It's been a while since I fired mine up.
And also Xbox, I can't even do it for the Xbox I got for that amount. I don't even hear from PC.
You'd have to have like, you can only get what, 16 people in a party in Xbox, but is there a limit, Paris, on the number of people in a party for PlayStation?
I think it's eight.
So short of having 32 on 32, okay, maybe, but if you can't get that total group into a party, into a match, and be able to communicate, like, it's, I don't know. I kind of see it being just extra uselessness in a game. That's just my personal opinion. I could be wrong, guys. If you disagree and you like the 64 mega,
well, I disagree with you on that, because it's not even realistic to think that you're going to have 32 people in a Skype session or whatever you're going to use on a PC. So I wouldn't expect that on a console either. It's not what Battlefield multiplayer has ever really been about, trying to get all 32 people on one side together communicating. That's going to be such a cluster anyways, because everyone's going to talk over each other. So
I think it makes sense if they're like close to you in that area. That makes sense
chat.
Too. Yeah, like that will work. But everybody at the same time, not a great idea.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
What about this one? This a big announcement, which I know we talked about this in the past. We were guessing, okay, what's the next Respawn game that they're probably going to be announcing in the future? And I know we were like, we talked about this a couple episodes ago, but I was not expecting Star Wars at all. A new Star Wars game by Respawn. Super surprised. And they announced this on May 4th, which is Star Wars Day, for those who don't know. I wasn't shocked. I was very surprised. And now I'm super hyped because I trust Respawn. I think they will make this game even more official and more fun, I think. But what are your thoughts, Paris, once we heard the news?
No, I'm actually just happy for Respawn more than anything. I mean, we knew a Star Wars game was going to come from EA. Of course it was. So the fact that EA has enough faith in what Respawn is doing with Titanfall 2 and just where the studio's heading in the future to give them the franchise, you know what I mean? I mean, Star Wars is going to sell. So the fact that they've entrusted them with such a flagship title, it's huge for those guys. So I'm very curious to see what they're going to do with it, especially on the multiplayer side, because you know whatever this is going to have, it's going to have some multiplayer component to it. So I'm excited for it. I definitely am. And I know, Pete, you wanted this to be 13-13. I'm guessing it's not. I think what 13-13 was going to be is dead, but I think we'll see some iteration of it. Some game, Star Wars game, will pull features from that dead IP and iterate it into it. So maybe it'll be this Respawn game. I mean, we'll have to wait.
There's a lot of possibility for this game. I mean, you've got a lot of names, namely Stig Asmussen, famous for God of War 3, that was hired and was put on this project. And then I want to know, whatever happened with Amy Hennig? Like, she signed with EA, like, was it 2014? You know, the director, the creative director and the writer for Uncharted. Whatever happened to her? Is she tied to this? You know what I mean? Like, did she make her way over? And you know, this could, I guess, fall under the rumor belt thing, and we'll talk about that later for E3. But I would love to see someone with the ability of like an Amy Hennig working with Stig and Respawn on this Star Wars thing, because then you have that out of left field Star Wars project, similar to what 1313 did a couple of years ago when they came out and unfortunately fell, you know, in the cutting room floor. But I would love to see a combo like that make a Star Wars game. Either borrow from canon and have that third person action adventure game going, but bringing a fresh face or fresh thought to, you know, Star Wars. It's not, you know, I love to see Boba Fett, but I want to see other characters. I don't want to see the ones that we always see on the films.
My question is, are they going to make a brand new game, or is it, they're going to bring back a game from back in the days, like, let's say, Republic Commando or, you know, other Star Wars games. What do you guys think?
I would imagine it's going to be something new. I don't see a purpose for bringing back something. Like, I understand in the spirit of bringing something like Republic Commando back, because I think there was so much potential with that particular series in Star Wars, you know, doing squad based, you know, shooter, multiplayer, all that. But, you know, if you really want to push the envelope, do something new in this, basically in this new Episode 7 universe that you've done. I mean, I think we've done enough of the old Republic. Let's do something new. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true. Very, very true.
So you're thinking more, give me a Rey, Poe, and group thing, or are you thinking more of, along the lines of something maybe from the books and the you know, the that area of Star Wars, or a combination?
Well, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking something, and not necessarily this specifically. I'm thinking something like Rogue One, where it's in the verse. It's something in the lore that's happened, but you're telling it with characters we've never seen before. You know, I don't need it to be Kylo Ren and Poe and all those guys. Give me another subset of something actively going on in the current Episode 7 universe, but with an all new cast, so to speak. So does the
requirement for canon have to be in here? Wasn't there something about that?
Oh yeah,
it does. With all new Star Wars projects moving forward have to be canon, right?
Yeah, it has to be canon. Okay. So it's something that would be running parallel with what we're seeing in the movies.
Gotcha. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. I think that would be
I'm okay with that.
Same here. All right. So you guys ready for E3 Productions or what?
Are you ready?
No. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Are you ready, Paris? Because Paris is not ready. He's not ready for this, man. He's not ready for this. Paris, are you ready?
Well, you just said I'm not, so I guess I'm not.
All right, I guess he's not.
Let's do it. Let's go.
Hey, darling, this is certified psychic Miss Leo. Now, I can usually tell you things about your future by using the power of my tarot cards. But when it comes to video games, only the guys at Gamertag Radio can give you the E3 2016 predictions. You hear me?
All right, so we're here now.
I'm still not over that, dude. I'm still not over that intro, man. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it is pretty funny. It's hilarious, man. So this time we're going to predict Microsoft, and hopefully next time we also talk about Sony, but this time all about Xbox. Here is my crazy predictions. Of course, besides everything they announced last year, of course they're going to show that, you know, show finally gameplay of Crackdown and ReCore and, you know, and other games, Gears of War, etc. Here's my crazy prediction. Lately, Microsoft been releasing old games that you could finally play on Xbox One of Sega, right? So when we went to Sony's press conference, they had a big announcement of Shenmue, right? That was pretty, pretty big. Then another time too, you know, Nintendo announced Bayonetta 2 for the Wii U. And actually, Microsoft is the only company so far that have no exclusive Sega games. But in the past, I remember during the first Xbox console, they had, you know, Shenmue as an exclusive there, Shenmue 2. They had also Jet Set Radio and et cetera, you know, other games and so on. I think, call me crazy, I think it's possible that they could probably bring back Jet Set Radio for the Xbox One. You could call me crazy or not. This is just a crazy prediction. But the reason why I'm saying that is because they're the only company so far that they haven't had no exclusive Sega games for this console. You know, Sony and Nintendo, they've done it in the past. It's possible that maybe they'll get permission to get one of the Sega's franchises to be worked on for this console by a different developer. Call me crazy, but that's my crazy prediction for E3 from Microsoft. But Pierre Paris or Pete?
I think ReCore gets pushed back to 2017.
Has it ever been said that it was coming out in 2016?
Yeah. No, they haven't.
They've they've generalized. They haven't hardlined it, but I think they push it back. I think they have forced. I think they officially push it back because I don't know that last release of theirs. Mm-hmm. Do we really want to beat that horse as well? I mean, it was not. I don't know if it. Would you say Quantum Break was a success?
Well, Scalebound, didn't that push back to 2017, right?
Yeah. Scalebound is definitely 2017. They've already said that.
That got pushed. Okay. But see, that's the thing that I think that Microsoft needs to make some announcement that's going to get the hardcore crowd excited.
Isn't that Gears of War 4?
No, I mean, besides the usual, you know, IPs that comes out almost every year, I'm talking about old franchises. Like you said, Banjo, you would like to see a new Banjo game, right?
Yeah, if they say Banjo, security is going to tackle me because I'm going to run on stage.
But see what I'm saying?
Thank you, Phil.
But you see what I'm saying? Look, remember the reaction last year when they showed, you know, Shenmue and they showed Final Fantasy.
Yeah, and what have you heard about those since?
But it doesn't matter. Pete, doesn't matter because that got the media to talk about it. That got the hardcore crowd to be excited. They got people to buy the console because of those announcements, and Sony has been really, really good with that past E3s. Even if it comes out 4-5 years later, it still was a great move to just get the hardcore
to lie excited to the gamers and say, "Oh, no, not
lying. That's not lying. That's not lying. that's not lying at all." You know, I think that's just to get them excited. Look, it's coming. It's going to take a couple more years, but it got them excited. There's nothing wrong with that. Why not Microsoft make an announcement like, say, Banjo or something, a classic, an old classic? It doesn't have to be multiple games, but just one game. That's why me personally, I'd say, like, oh, maybe Jet Set Radio or something that's really old school and people are going to get excited about, you know? I think Banjo is another great game, too, you know? So
I don't think this is surprising. I think another Forza.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it'll be Horizon this year.
Now, by who? Who's going to be developing that game?
Turn 10. Why wouldn't Turn 10?
No. But no, nope. The last Horizon wasn't Turn 10.
It wasn't?
Nope.
It was a different developer. You're right. My bad.
Turn 10 was still working on the last Forza game that just came out last year.
By the way, side note, Forza Apex beta is out on Windows 10, and I was playing it the other day in 4K. Yeah. Woo! It looks okay.
Experience, right? A better experience than Quantum Break.
Without a doubt, it's a definitely better on Windows 10 experience. They've actually patched Quantum Break on Windows 10. I haven't tried it. I gotta actually try it and see if they fixed it. But Apex looks amazing in 4K on Windows 10. So
is that by Turn 10 or is that?
Yeah, that's by Turn 10. Because when I interviewed, what was the name? Dan Greenwald talking about that. Yeah, they're the ones that are making it. Which Horizon, when it does come out, it'll be on Windows 10 too, because all the Forza games moving forward will be on Xbox One.
Sumo Digital,
10.
Right? That worked on Horizon 2?
Possible. I'd have to look it up if you're looking at it. It'd be
possible. You know what? I know last week we were talking with Ryan, and I was listening to the interview again. Paris, I think Microsoft is going to probably announce Family Share tied in with this new hardware that's going to be coming out. I think that's possible now for this year. It's been a couple years. I think it's the right time to make that announcement.
You know I want it. That's what I mean. I've been talking about forever. I think you know what? You know, I'll say this. I'll do my Miss Leo on myself. If they were to bring family sharing back and it was everything that they were talking about it being at launch, I'd probably go get an Xbox again just for that. Because then it would be worth it to me.
Okay. And we share.
Yeah, then we would share.
We share games.
All the games. Well, I guess I should do my crazy prediction. My crazy prediction is they're not going to bring back family sharing. They're not going to announce some new Xbox 1.5. I think we get an Xbox Slim. I think it's kind of like what Ryan was saying on the interview. I think we get an Xbox Slim. They'll probably iterate on the controller. It won't be the Xbox Elite controller, but they're going to integrate some of the features of it into the standard controller now.
So you're going to get the Elite Lite.
maybe something like that. Maybe. I just think the controller gets a tweak coming up here. They'll just make an Xbox One Slim. They'll lower the price $250, and they're going to double down on the games. They're going to push, here are all the awesome games that you can play on Xbox One and Windows 10 and why you should have an Xbox. You should invest into our Windows 10 Xbox One ecosystem, because here are all the great games that you'll be able to play. And I think they're going to go PC to Xbox One as far as the game streaming goes. They're going to do it the other way now too, or at least I hope they do, because that's what I want to see. So those are my predictions for Microsoft. And I do think Sea of Thieves is going to steal the show.
Yeah, I'm very shocked that you said that. Why? Why is that?
Because, and again, I really take this from when Ryan was talking about it. It kind of piqued my interest again. So I went back and watched the press conference from last year talking about it, and just reading a few things online. This could be their Division/Destiny shared universe game, and would be exclusive to Xbox One, Windows 10. I think that would be huge for them. That's something that will pull people into their ecosystem to play, because I think these shared universe games are the future of gaming. I think that's where everything's going. You know what I mean?
So God knows, I think Rare needs that positive light in there.
Yeah, they do.
They need that good project for them. So they've been in such a dark, dismal hole for the past couple of years. I think they need that fresh IP to bring Rare back to the limelight like they used to be.
Yeah, and while I want Banjo, I mean, I'm not going to hold my breath anymore for it. I do think. And it may not necessarily be Rare. They may give it to another studio. I do think they bring back an old Rare IP, you know, for the new generation. They're going to bring another one back.
Gunkers!
I don't think so, because isn't it? You know what? And this isn't a prediction. What the hell happened to Project Spark? Is that still a thing?
Yeah, it's still going. Yeah, it's still on. Yeah, why?
I'm just curious, because I haven't seen anything worthwhile come out of it yet.
Wasn't Project Spark canceled?
No. Fable Legends got canceled, not Project Spark. But that's been going. It's been out for a while. People could download it and play the game and create their own stuff.
Well, then that asks the question: when are we going to see something relevant come out of that? When are we going to see Microsoft actively push Project Spark and not call it Project Spark? When is it going to get out of quote unquote alpha or beta and become a real thing? You know, is this the E3 for it? I guess we'll see.
Well, this, I mean, look, Microsoft been, you know, they're going to have a fan fest again, and they're going to invite, I believe, 500 gamers to the press conference, and also going to be getting E3 passes, same as last year. And by them doing that, you know, they're going to have some big announcements. They have to make some big announcement if they're gonna have like the hardcore fans there, man. You know, so we'll see what happens, man. If they announce Family Share or not, or bring back some classics, announce some crazy exclusive, maybe have an announcement that you could play Windows games to your Xbox. I mean, we've been talking about that for a while too, right? That's possible to happen too, because you know they are gonna push the whole Windows gaming more than ever for this year's E3. And also remember too, don't forget Gamescom, because to me, E3 is just part one of their surprises, and then Gamescom will be part two. So that's another thing we gotta think about too. Anything else, guys? Any other predictions before we go to the next topic?
I think we're good. I think
you're good.
I think we've covered some crazy concepts, and it's gonna be an interesting year. It's gonna be an interesting year for E3 in general.
Yeah, it's very true. I know people are gonna call me crazy with the Sega exclusive or whatever. Who knows? I'm still waiting for Battletoads. That never happened.
Never gonna.
Thanks,
happen.
Paris, for killing my dreams. All right, so Pete,
yep.
I know you've been playing Battleborn now for a couple of days. Tell us a little bit about the game, man.
All right, so Battleborn was released on May 3rd. I guess the best way to describe it. All right, so it was developed by Gearsoft. If you know Borderlands, you know what they bring to the table, published by 2K, It's on Windows, PlayStation 4, Xbox One. If they made a Borderlands-style first-person shooter meets MOBA hybrid, that's what Battleborn is. Okay. I slept on this game when they announced it 2 years ago. They said it was going to be... Or I'm sorry, not Gearsoft, it's Gearbox, my bad. So it's a space setting, so you're in a space fantasy story-type setting. Think Borderlands artwork throughout the game. You're not expecting, you know, the 4K super high defined stuff. It's got that real artistic experience. So you have all of these inhabitants of all these different planets in the universe fleeing to a single planet called Solus because all of the other planets have been destroyed. So everybody's out for their own. And then they all appear on this one planet. And of course, when you shove a whole bunch of different people together, you know, attitudes, personalities are going to clash and there's going to be a major fight somewhere. So every species sends their best warriors to represent them. And those people are known as the Battleborn. There's three modes at launch. There's Meltdown, which is like an arena mode battle. Incursion, which is a base destruction type match. And Devastation, which is a base capture. You could play solo or with co-op up to three other players in your team in either private public servers. There's 25 different characters to choose from at launch. There's supposed to be a lot more that gets unlocked and available through DLC or Season Pass. So you've got, you know, the slow tanks, you've got melee characters, support, which apparently I suck horribly at. I think it was Miko that first night that I played, and I literally lasted about 4 minutes and I backed out and chose a different character. You get your melee, you get your magic type area effect attacks, and then I guess you can call them ultimates. They're the same. They're similar to what, you know, is in League of Legends. I've had a lot of fun on these. I don't play MOBA styles as much as I probably should, considering that's all my son plays. But I've had a really, really good time with this, and I really recommend you guys check it out. I don't know if this can be considered a first impression or a full-on review of the game, but I've had a lot of fun, and it's something refreshing, you know, and trying to step away from, you know, the divisions and those. Granted, yes, it's a first-person style shooter, but it's Borderlands style, so you know it's going to be funny. There's going to be jokes. It's going to be it's a good time. I've had a lot of fun with it, and I recommend you guys play it.
Paris, have you played it? Because I know it's on PC too. So
no, I've not played it actually. But you know, Pete's been actively talking about it here the last few days. I definitely need to cut out some time and check it out for sure.
Cutting out a lot of time about Division, but you ain't jumped on that.
Yeah, let's keep going. I'm not gonna say, people get mad at me. There was a dude on Twitter like a few days ago, just mad. He's like, you don't even play the game. Why don't you just play the game and then you'll know if you like it or not? I'm like, look, man, I'm not playing it with all these exploits. Let them fix exploits and then I'll jump in. No, you just need to play it now. He was like, he was dead serious, dude. He was like, this is not a game. You need to get on the Division.
A new podcast featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Take it out. You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so Pete, you ready for this?
Fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
Fan mail.
All right, there you go. We have a couple of voicemails and also email questions. Please continue to send us questions. Or you can send us MP3 wave to fanmail at gamertagradio.com. Call us 786-273-7GTR. So let's play their first voicemail here for this week's episode.
Gamertag Radio, what's going on? This is Damien from New York. Actually, I'm in Connecticut right now, but I live in New York. First time caller. Glad to really, really like your podcast. And I've listened for a while, but this is the first time I've called. So... I'm listening to the Monday podcast, Monday being May 2nd, and I'm listening to Paris talk about the NX, and he's sharing the speculation that he thinks it's a console handheld hybrid that pretty much everyone else is thinking, along the lines of, I take this game that I'm using on my huge big screen television, I get to play it anywhere I go, on the bus, at lunch, at work, whatever. So here's my question, and you know, I'm kind of into the idea as well, but I'm let's try and play a little devil's advocate right here, right? So there's been this thing that's been the narrative of mobile gaming or handheld gaming, really both, that the types of games you play on a console in front of a big screen are not the times not the types of games you want to play on a handheld or mobile device. We saw Sony try and do it with the PSP, try to make console games more mobile or more handheld or more portable. And I'm not going to say that they failed, but I'm not going to say that their successes are due to that idea. We saw again with the Vita, they tried to say this is the most powerful handheld ever. It's going to handle all your big blockbuster console games. And people didn't really gravitate towards that idea. More on the other hand, you have the 3DS and the DS, and also stuff on mobile gaming, which is a bit more bite-sized. You get it for a little bit, and then you go off and do the stuff you're doing, and then maybe when you break or your lunch break or your, you know, your recess at school or whatever, you go back and play that. So it seems that people on mobile want more bite-sized experiences, whereas the big blockbuster console games are more reserved for, I'm in my living room, I have these 2 hours to burn. So how can Nintendo take one device and attract both audiences at the same time? That's my question. I want to know if you guys have any idea of how Nintendo can pull that off, especially considering Sony's tried doing similar things with their handhelds, and I'm not so certain it's actually worked for them. So how is Nintendo going to be able to pull that off? I really hope you guys answer the question. I think it's a fairly interesting one. Y'all take care. Hope to catch y'all later. Peace.
Great question about Nintendo NX. Paris, we talked about this a couple episodes ago. That I know that's one of your crazy predictions, that this could be in handheld and in console into one package. How can Nintendo make the right handheld that is going to be the same type of experience as the console? How they can manage to do that, though?
Well, I do think my prediction is crazy as hell, so I'm not necessarily saying it's going to happen. But I do appreciate them, being a listener of the show and first time with sending a voicemail. He brings up the excellent point. There is a balance that needs to be had with the home console experience versus the quick play of a mobile experience. A mobile experience, you need something that if you're on the train or whatever, you can play it for a few minutes, put it down, and you can come back to it later. Whereas a console, home console experience, is something that you want to sit down and be engaged with for literally hours at a time when you're playing. So that's why I said this whole prediction is very crazy. I don't see Nintendo just cut and dry saying, all right, from now on, all our games are console games and portable games, and you can flip-flop between the two of them. Let's go. There has to be a cutoff point somewhere. I think realistically, if these rumors are true of them having some type of portable experience, they will still have the 3DS type games, the mobile games, the games that cater strictly to being a mobile portable experience. But they'll also have a game, and I'm just taking Zelda for example. Zelda is something that you can sit down, be engrossed into that world, into that universe at home for hours at a time. But then there's a component to it that you can take on the go with you and kind of, you know, get a quick experience with, and then bring it right back home when you're done with it on the go. So, like I said, I do think it's a crazy thing. We're probably way off on what the NX is really going to be. We'll probably all look dumb, you know, 6 months from now when they fully unveil this thing. But I don't think it'll just be cut and dry with, all right, now all our games are just portable and console at the same time. There still will be a dividing factor, which, by the way, our good friend Michael Pachter, he's saying, and again, from whatever he may or may not know from his sources, that third party's not going to be on board with this thing day one. It's still going to be similar to what we've seen with the Wii U, where third party's just kind of non-existent.
That's not a good sign if that happens, though.
And no, it's not. It's not. It's definitely not. So, I mean, we'll see. Which, hey, that would kind of make sense why they're only focusing on Zelda at E3, because if there's no third-party NX games to highlight, there's nothing to talk about. Just focus on what's going to be the big launch game for the NX, and that's going to be Zelda.
Well, Nintendo fans, now you know. All right, so this is the next question, and this is about Destiny. This is, I think, dedicated to Pete and Paris. Let's play right now.
Hi, guys. Jim Wildman here from the UK. I'm on the Xbox gamertag Dingo Steel. Been listening to your show for 3 or 4 years. Love what you do. Just finished listening to episode 561. Love to Danny. Hope everything's okay at home, mate. Paris, at the end, you were right when you said we miss Danny, but you didn't do yourself justice. You did a cracking job behind the reins. Real top job. So my question for you guys is, and I'm sure there's going to be groans because it's about Destiny, but it really applies to the whole gaming industry. If this practice that I wanted to talk about becomes more common. So I wanted to ask you about the business model that Bungie have had this year. I suppose I'm directing the question at Paris because I'm guessing you've played the April update. So I just really want to know what you think about the change from last year's model of traditional paid DLC to this year's model of being funded by microtransactions and what we the players get out of that, I suppose. Just to be clear, I am a mega Destiny fanboy. I'm not ashamed of that. I know that you guys will probably think that I'm biased, but my point here is, by this time last year, we'd had Dark Below, and House of Wolves was about 3 weeks away. I think it was released sort of mid-May. With hindsight, those DLCs were slightly flawed, but at the time, I loved them, and I know a lot of people played the crap out of them, basically. And this year, since taking King, all we've had is Sparrow Racing, which was pretty limited but fun. And now we've got Challenge of the Elders, which is really just a tweak of last year's Prison. Yeah, I've enjoyed both, but they've been very slim on the ground content-wise. There've also been a couple of little events here and there, but they've just been plain bad, so like Crimson Days, that sort of thing. Basically, I'm thinking that this new model is straight-up failure. We should return to paid DLC. I can see the benefits of not having to sort of fork out $20-$30 every few months. But in its place, we've just had very small bits of content that I just can't see keeping the game going for the 10 years that Bungie reckon. And I'd be even more worried if this sort of way of funding a game become more common practice further afield in the gaming industry. I'd love to know what you guys think about this. Catch you later. Keep up the good work.
Out. All right. Thanks for the voicemail. Guys, would like to answer this question?
Well, Pete can't answer. He don't play it no more. So I guess
you're a fan.
He can talk about the glitches on the Division, but he can't talk about this. No, to answer his question again, thank you for the email and thank you for the kind words. You know, Danny's the host. I just stumble my way through this stuff when I can. But when it comes to Destiny, yeah, I still play it. Obviously, as I've been talking about with my son, and since that April update has come out, I mean, it's been even better because I think they finally found the perfect balance for leveling up your characters, and they're not forcing you into just doing the raid to be able to get to, you know, in game light level. I mean, you can basically do whatever you want in the game now, and you're going to be able to level up your characters, which has been great. As far as his question goes about the DLC versus the free DLC and the paid structure that they had in year one, I like the structure better because you now have the Eververse trading thing with the silver, and people are buying, you know, the cosmetic items to kind of fund the live team. If anything, with this Activision financial call that just came out, it sounds like Activision is working more with Bungie and getting other studios involved so they can pump out more content, because that's been the biggest issue with Destiny, really, is people love the end game content. They just want more of it. So if they're able to actually get us more in-game content. You know, we obviously know we're going to have a paid expansion here at the end of the year. There's going to be Destiny 2 in 2017. But if we can still get these free DLC experiences like we just got in this April update for free, give that to me. I'm more than willing to keep paying for expansion packs, you know, and the proper sequels. But if we can also have free DLC sprinkled in the middle of that as well to keep the community engaged, why not? So, yeah, the year one thing kind of worked because we kind of knew exactly when we were getting things because we were paying for it. But I do like what they've done in year two with this April update. I would like to see more of those type of free DLC experiences as well.
All right. All right, well, Pete, next question. You have any questions there?
Actually, yeah, it just came in.
Okay, all right.
This is from David. Hello, been a fan of the show and like to ask two questions. With all of the Call of Duty hate on the new game from this past week, how does Infinity Ward deal with the hate on social media? What do both companies and or yourself feel on this hate? But will something positive come out at this year's E3?
I think they do exactly what they've already been doing and ignore it. Why? They're yeah. still. I mean, think about it. And this goes back to the whole Battlefield 1 trailer where people on social media, Call of Duty's dead, blah, 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 blah. It's like, come on, really? At the end of 2016, when the NPDs come out, guess what's going to be the number one selling game for 2016? It's going to be Call of Duty. Because whether we like it or not, whether we think the campaign is the same old nonsense every year, guess what? It is it is the king of esports right now. It has an amazing following. People buy this game for the multiplayer. And when 11/4/16 comes out, people are going to be running to the store to go buy this game. They're going to jump on with their buddies and they're going to play that multiplayer all day long. And that's it is what it is. Until I actually see sales plummet, I start seeing the demise of Call of Duty. I can't call it. I cannot sit here and say that just because you got a bunch of people hitting the dislike button on YouTube means that Call of Duty's in trouble, because it's not. I mean,
it's not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. And basically, when there's negative tweets or whatever on social media about Call of Duty, that's free promotion. People are still going to buy it. So the
second half of his question was, should Activision take a year off or two on the Call of Duty franchise? Look at what Ubisoft is doing with the Assassin's Creed series, which is cool. And I think at least take 2 years off to start anew.
No, I doubt that's gonna
happen. Here's the difference. Assassin's Creed sales were starting to go down. Call of Duty sales ain't. Until they're not selling as much as they used to anymore and it starts to become a problem, they ain't taking a break. They're going to keep pumping out. Look, they got three studios doing Call of Duty now so that they can make sure that they have one every year. So it's not happening. No way.
Yeah. Good luck with that. All right. Any other questions there?
There's plenty of questions.
Oh, yeah. I have one. I have
All
one.
Right, go for
so, because I love his name. His name is Salty. And this one is just straight up for Pete. So he's going, hey, guys, been listening to the show for about a year and I greatly enjoy it. Helps me get through mowing my lawn and other mundane tasks in my life. I'm 36 years old, married with two kids. I know that life. I'm 42 and I got three. Been gaming since I was 6 years old on the NES. Never been a hardcore gamer and I've always gamed for enjoyment with friends. I've been playing The Division for a couple weeks and I'm loving it.
Good.
Playing with some family members and having tons of fun. I keep hearing about these exploits and glitches. The more I hear about it, the more annoyed I get that people would base whether they want to play a game on there being glitches in the game or not. Because truth be told, sorry, what major game has come out recently that has not had glitches or problems? GTA 5, The Division, Watch Dogs, Destiny, Call of Duty, etc. All of them have exploits and glitches. It seems the majority of major AAA titles that come out always have issues. Isn't this more of an issue with people playing the games versus the game itself? I'll just stop it right there. Thank you, Salty, for sending in these from Morgan. So, Pete, we've talked about this, you know, a million times. Every game has issues. I mean, look, Destiny had issues, you know, day one. The Division obviously is going through that period. I think, and I was just having this conversation offline with a friend, a year from now, the division that we see today will be a completely different experience. I think a lot of these issues that they're having will be resolved. Now, I know they have the client side files on the PC and maybe that's not as easily resolved, but I think the division on the console will find a steady place to be at, a comfortable level to be at that's pretty balanced, and we're getting the loot and everything that we're looking for in the in-game experiences that we're looking for, and people will be satisfied. Am I thinking it's going to come in the next 2 months? Absolutely not. But I think you have to be patient with these shared world games, because like Salty's saying, all of the major AAA games have issues. So what do you think about this?
I'm going to agree with you on that one. I know Destiny Year 2 wasn't the same Destiny we all played immediately after launch. Think about it. We're still, a month and change out from the launch of the game. Like, there's the next round of DLC that's getting ready to drop at the end of this month, I believe. So there's going to be changes, and it's been a slow process. It may have been a mistake doing the client side thing. But again, this is a new IP. These are the things that pop up when you drop a new IP, things that you were not expecting to experience. You can't QC a perfect game coming out every time. Like, you can't troubleshoot or have an expectation for every single possible glitch or exploit or hack that may come out. It is what it is. And it's up to Massive and Ubisoft to fix it so that it keeps the players that are still playing the game entertained and wanting to play the game, and is enough to entice people like Paris, who've still been, you know, cautious and hesitant to jump into it, and give them a reason to come in and play the game. I know, Paris, you and I talked about this offline, about maybe it's too far gone for someone like you, who has stayed away from the game, to jump in now and maybe get some kind of enjoyment out of it. And I think I may have mentioned this on a couple of shows ago, how, like, if I were to jump into Destiny, even with the 25 light jump, there's still so much more that I would have to do to get onto a level and play the game to an enjoyable state, that I don't know if it's something I want to put all that extra time and effort into.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, my main thing is just time. I know it's going to require a lot of time and effort, you know, to invest into this game to get to a level to where I can compete and do a lot of the in-game stuff. And when I'm reading that it's having a lot of exploits and glitches, and I already have other games that I'm sinking a lot of time into that I would have to stop sinking time into to invest in this one, I don't necessarily know I want to do that, because I don't want to run into a situation where I'm getting frustrated because of a glitch or an exploit is keeping me from enjoying the game the way I want to. So I choose to just simply wait it out. It's right. Like I keep telling, look, all the people mad at me on Twitter, like I keep telling you every damn time, I will play this game, Mona. I'm going to play it. All right. So I'm not saying I won't play it. It's just, you know, I want to wait until a lot of these glitches and stuff. Like, again, I think E3 is going to be a big tell for whatever Ubisoft is going to do. I think they need to say something about the future of the division at E3, because if they don't, you know, like, there was a report that came out, and I know it was more on the PC side, but they've lost 81% of their audience already. Yep. On the PC. Yep. But again, the PC is suffering more of these glitches than the console is. So it makes sense that that's happening, but that's huge. You have to fix that. You can't have your audience feeling like they can't play a game because it's too glitchy or there's too many hackers out there. And I know they're addressing it, because I think there's a patch about to come out here in the next week or so, I do believe, that addresses some of this stuff. So they just need to keep doing that, and they need to communicate with their community and let people know that they are working on this, and here's where we expect the game to be, you know, in July, because we got this piece of DLC coming out or whatever. That's all. And I think, like I said, I think a year from now we'll be having a completely different conversation about this game.
Now, here's one thing too, that Ubisoft is going to learn from this experience, and they're going to make Ghost Recon, is kind of similar to this one. They're going to make the game even better. And it releases sometime next year. All right, so this is from Jules. He's listening to the podcast about Tenryu E3. Have to be honest, it's rather depressing news. I didn't buy the Wii U. I saw it on the display when it first released, and it wasn't impressed graphically. When you walk into the store, into any store, like at Walmart, you're always going to see the three consoles, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Wii U, are all side by side or super close to each other. It was hard for me as a consumer to purchase a Wii U with my hard-earned dollars when the graphically is still years behind. The other consoles at release were visually stunning. Combine that with bad taste I have after the slow release of truly great games on the original Wii. Hey, man, I don't blame you at all. Now that I'm gaming again, I debated the Wii U as the library of games has grown, but before I put the trigger, with the whole NX rumors starting popping up, well, now I'm hyped for the classic and Nintendo IP with the current gen and other better graphics. This console will likely have third-party support. I don't know about that, but okay. Now I'm stuck. I can buy the Wii U knowing the life is about over or wait almost a year. That wasn't even a question. That was more of an email. So they buy a Wii U or not. I think that don't buy a Wii U. Wait until more news comes later this year about the NX. And most likely you could play your old games of the Wii U games. You could play it here in this NX console. I think that's a great way for you to have a bigger library once the NX comes out. Because all those games are going to be cheaper. You're going to find it for a very cheap price. And you don't need to buy a Wii U. So if you miss out games like Mario Maker, Mario Kart, Super Smash Brothers, you could play that on the NX. Hopefully, if Nintendo plans to have those games available for the NX, which I think is possible. So yeah, save your money. Don't buy the Wii U now. And wait till more news comes out later this year about the NX. My thoughts.
We asked a couple episodes ago to get some of the listeners to give in their thoughts on a video game to movie translation, and we got a couple.
Okay.
Kyle said a BioShock movie, and I think Paris had mentioned that. I think that would be pretty good. I mean, hell, in the first 15 to 30 minutes of the first BioShock was kind of creepy.
Yep.
You know? So yeah, I've absolutely seen the little girls and oh, hell yeah.
Underwater.
Underwater. Ooh. Yeah, absolutely. I would love to see that. I know, actually Jules just talked about the Nintendo stuff. He talked about a Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
It won't work.
I don't know if I could. I don't know if I definitely wouldn't spend my money on that. G. Wade mentioned Crackdown as a movie. Maybe the first one.
The first one even had a great story. So why would you want a Crackdown movie?
Hey, that's what he wants. When you don't tell him.
No, maybe he enjoyed it enough.
You know,
I'm just saying my feedback. Jesus.
And
Christ.
Then Cody from Indiana said GTA.
Actually, see, that, I can see that. I can see that.
GTA would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, which GTA?
Vice City.
Yep. I agree.
Vice City or hell. I mean, it's been a while since Hollywood thrown out a decent Western. Why not a Red Dead movie?
Ooh, that's a pretty good one. Yeah. I like that.
Shout out
to
Cody, dude. Good stuff. I like that.
Shout out to everybody that's been sending emails and voicemails.
Well, what about this one from D-Rock? He's just saying first time email. He's a long time listener. He hollers at us on Twitter all the time, too. So thanks for the email. But he's saying the Shinobi movie is a bad idea. I could think of at least 10 games before I'd want to see a Shinobi movie. Destiny would be my number one pick. I'm like, Paris, I don't want to read the lore, and I can't listen to My Name is Bife read it to me because, no offense, his soothing voice puts me. So, hey, Bife's a good dude. I like Bife. I think everyone's been waiting to learn more about the story behind Destiny, and what better way to do it than giving us a movie. My other recommendations would be Gears of War, because I want to see Dave Bautista as Marcus Fenix and Cain Velasquez as Dom. Love the show. Appreciate the hard work you guys put into it. Thanks, D-Rock.
That's not a bad pick, though.
No, it's not. It's not. I would say Bungie. How about actually telling a story in your game first before we worry about a movie? But
you're right.
But Yeah, I mean, you know, Gears of War, I love Dave Bautista in Guardians, but he would literally have to carry the movie as the lead guy. I don't think he could do it. And Kane would probably get injured just walking onto the set, so he wouldn't be a bad choice as Dom.
Oh, man, come on, dude. Kane's a good dude.
My God.
Kane's a good dude, man. You know, I've met him.
I'm salty at Kane because I want to see him fight. He keeps getting hurt. And I'm like, God damn it, just get in the ring.
All right. So I think that's enough of emails. Paris, I know there's a couple of PC news that's been going on.
Oh, my God, yes. Yesterday, NVIDIA had a little press conference, and they announced the 1080 and the 1070 next-gen cards that are going to be on the – Is it Pasquale? Is that right?
Pasquale.
Yeah, on the new Pasquale chip. So just real quick, 1080 is going to come in at $599. The 1070 is going to come in at $379. 1080 should be out at the end of May, and the 1070 should be out in early June. There's going to be a Founders Edition of the 1080 that will be retailing for $699. Just quick and dirty specs. 1080 is going to have 8 gigs of GDDR5X memory, I believe. And they did a quick comparison. And just for example, the 1080 versus the 980, the 1080 is going to have 1.7 times the performance on The Witcher 3 and over 2 times the performance when using VR. And I believe that Tomb Raider was another example, and that was almost 2 times the performance as well. So it's going to be a beastly card. I don't know if this is necessarily what I want to get. I think I'm going to hold out for the Ti, because they're even saying if you were to take 2 980s and SLI, it has more performance than 2 980s and SLI, which obviously is huge. But I'm going to hold out. I'm going to wait on the Ti version and see what that's looking like. This is still not doing true 4K gaming. And this is more of a 1440, 60 frames per second beast. Is what I'd be looking for. Obviously, the 1070 is going to be more of the standard consumer card coming in at $379. That's going to be a little more affordable than the 1080. And, you know, again, if you're a 1080p gamer, you can get that 1070. You're going to be rock solid playing your games in 1080p, 60 frames per second. So I'm excited for it because it just goes to show you how far advanced, you know, all these GPU performances are going, and not to mention the power consumption has been cut almost in half as well. It's an amazing card coming out, but I have a 980. It's not enough to necessarily push me to run out and go spend $600 right now. So I'll wait to see what the 1080 Ti looks like before I actually make a decision.
You changed your mind right away, Paris, or you were at first thinking like, okay, I might get this?
Well, Pete at first said it's going to be $1,000. I was like, oh, hell no, I'm not spending $1,000. But then when they...
Well, you think about it, the 1080 is supposed to be better than the Titan X.
And
the
it is.
Because actually the 1070, if you compare the specs, the 1070 is the Titan X performance half the cost. Because the Titan X is a grand. So I figure I jumped out immediately, just assuming that it would be, you know, it would cost you a stack to get it. But I'm still not adult enough to go out and throw $600+ on a brand new video card. I can't do it.
Well, I'm not in so much so that my current card still serves my needs just fine. I play all my games in Ultra, so it's not like I'm hurting. You know what I mean? And it's not like this is that card, that single GPU card that's going to enable me to play 4K, you know, at close to 60 frames. I mean, that's really the end game for me. So, I mean, I'll see what the Ti looks like. You know, I'm sure the Ti is going to have, because there's going to be another Titan card as well, and that'll be your 1,000 stacks right there. And then they'll have the Ti probably mid next year. I'll look at that and see how close that gets to 4K gaming. And then maybe I'll just make an adult decision at that time. But if you have a 980 or if you have a 980 Ti, there's absolutely no reason to upgrade today. You might as well wait it out and see what it looks like next year.
Yeah, because if you're still running a 600 or 700 series, then okay, yeah, it might be time. It might make more sense to maybe jump into a 1070 or 1080 at this time. But all right, yeah, I'm even on my... Actually, you know what? I got to shut down my computer after the show and finally install my 970 back in. I've been running on the old 670, but
yeah,
I don't even know if I'm ready. I mean, granted, I'd have to switch out my motherboard because I don't even think my motherboard is SLI compatible. But don't know, that my 970 was just fine before it went down.
And that's the thing. As far as PC gaming goes today, a 970 is fine. You're not hurting at all having a 970. You're going to play most games high-end slash up to ultra using a 970, so you're not hurting. And that's what I mean. If you're even higher than a 970, this announcement, if anything, this announcement just makes 970 and 980 cards that much cheaper. You know what I mean? Because it's going to push the price down. I would say right now, if I was a PC gamer, I'd be looking for a 980 or a Ti or 980 Ti on discount, because that's probably going to be your sweet spot. And it's going to hold you for at least another couple years easily, especially if you're a 1080p gamer. If you're going into 1440p, 980 should still be good enough. And obviously, like I said, if you want to do 4K, you're doing some type of SLI solution right now, and you're probably looking at two 980 Ti's or you're looking at two Titan X's. So do you really want to drop that coin to do 4K? I don't. I mean, I play The Witcher 3 in 1440p, and I'm perfectly fine with that. It looks great to me. You know, I don't necessarily need to go to 4K right now. I would like to at some point, but not at the price. It's just too much right now. It's just financially, it's just irresponsible to be dropping potentially about $1,500 just so I can play it in 2160p at a decent frame rate. So I'll wait. I'll see what that 1080 Ti looks like, and then I'll make a decision at that time, because I don't know about you, Pete. I kind of don't want to do SLI anymore. I'd rather just go with a single GPU, because SLI, while it's great, you get a performance boost. Not all the games support it properly. I mean, right, you have to wait for all these different driver updates and all that. I'd rather day one play the game and it works the way that it should, versus hoping and praying I get a proper support of it in SLI. So I look, as an adult, I think I'm just going with one GPU moving forward. I don't see me being all fancy.
There's
going
to be a press conference between Microsoft and Ubisoft's press conference, and this one's going to be about all PC. It's called the PC Gaming Show, which I believe Paris might be attending there. I'm not 100% sure, but this is going to be happening on Monday, June 13th at 11:30 PST. Paris, do you think they're going to be announcing any big announcements during this press conference?
How about you wait till our PC Miss Leo segment, and then I'll answer those questions for you.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. I have no idea. I after last year, because I got a little hype last year, and really it was kind of just Phil showed up and all that. I'm not holding my breath. And yeah, I registered for it. We'll see on that Monday on E3 press conference Monday if the timing works out, because we're going to Microsoft that morning. PC Gamer Show is after that, and then we have Ubisoft and PlayStation after that. So it really just depends if the timing works out. I mean, if I don't attend Ubisoft, then yeah, I'll probably go to that one, and then you guys can cover Ubisoft or something. We'll see. It's way too early to see how that's going to work out.
Well, we'll see in a couple of weeks. We have more predictions coming up, so. Which one do you think we should do next?
PlayStation.
Next prediction.
PlayStation.
PlayStation?
Yeah. All
right, so PlayStation will be next. Stay tuned for that. Miss Leo, hit us up. All right, we're going to wrap it up now. Head over to GamertagRadio.com or play.it/GamerTag and listen to our past episodes. And you can find us at iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. Give us a call, 76-273-7GTR. That's 76-273-7GTR, or email us fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Very quick, I just purchased two places in games, Uncharted 4. It's already pre-ordered. I'm ready to play on May 10th. And also the new Ratchet & Clank game. I also purchased based on your review. Well, not a review, but most of your impressions of the game. Got me a little bit hyped, so I also purchased that too for my PlayStation 4. So pretty excited. Are you ready? You finished the game or no?
No, I am not done with it yet. It's just, dude, my life has been so crazy in real life. And I know I had promised a review, and then obviously, you had the issues that happened with you, and then we kind of were scrambling there for a few weeks. So I never did a proper review. So I need to do that. And, actually, Sony's about to send us Uncharted 4 too. So I got to figure that out as well. So maybe I should stop playing Destiny for a while in The Witcher.
Yeah, I think
you should definitely stop playing Destiny for a while.
Yeah, maybe I should do that.
Oh, man. What about you, Pete? Anything else?
No, man. Battleborn. Yeah. If you need me, look me up. Pete Rock on Steam. I'll be playing it. That's where I've been playing it since it launched. So
All right. Cool. Well, we're going to wrap it up. Until next time.
I got one more thing I want to say for you.
Okay. Yeah. Paris, go for it.
I just want anyone listening, subscribe to my other podcast, Two Big Topics. We're going to talk about Civil War on that episode, and I'm excited. So if you care what I think about Civil War, go subscribe to Two Big Topics. It should be out in a few days from you guys listening to this.
It's full of spoilers? Full of spoilers or not?
100% spoilers. The only way I roll. I don't do spoilers.
Damn!
Conflicted. Right. Conflicted. I still feel conflicted about this.
To be honest with you, what I want to talk about is we're going to talk about Civil War and, you know, the stuff that you're conflicted about. And then I also want to kind of talk about what Marvel's doing right and what DC's doing wrong. That'll be the two big topics that'll be on the show. No, but it's an interesting case study right now after watching Civil War. Because honestly, they basically told the same story in both movies. Batman, Superman, and Civil War are basically they're exact same thing. Right.
There's two leads that can't get along with differing opinions.
Yeah. One did it right and one did it horribly wrong. And I think it's a fascinating case study on what the comic book movie scene is going to look like moving forward. So, again, subscribe to Two Big Topics. I'll talk about the whole thing then.
All right. All right. So we're going to wrap it up. Until next time. We're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.